Most people are like, you know what? I don't want to fail. I don't want to look stupid. Like, what do you say to that?
You already look stupid. First of all, nobody gives a shit. Okay. We think that people care a lot more about what we look like than they actually do. Most people don't give a shit other than your family.
This is Eat, Sleep, Invest, the marketing podcast for real estate investors to get more deals.
Hey, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Eat, Sleep, and Invest. I'm your host, Brian Driscoll, and I'm here with Will Dennis. What's going on, man?
What's up, brother? How you doing?
Hey, same old. Thanks for coming on.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
All right, cool. So today's going to be a pretty cool chat. We're chatting with Will. Will did, in 1 year, 7.3 in assignment fees, right? So
yes, sir.
Everyone's in the space. They know that kind of number. It's pretty hard to get to. So he's going to kind of tell us a little bit of the secrets on like what he did. So first, hey, Will, give everybody a little background on like how you even got into real estate.
Yeah. So the short condensed version, I was a Merrill Lynch guy. I was living in New York on Wall Street. I was there for about a year and some change. I got fired, moved back in with my mom. I knew that I never wanted, it really pissed me off. So I never wanted to work for anybody again. I heard a podcast while I was putting out bandit signs for like diabetic testing strip business that a buddy of mine had at the time. So at this point, I'm like lost in my world. You know, my dream was wrecked. But I heard a Sean Terry podcast. There was a guy in Miami at the time that was doing quite a bit of deals. And I cold called him. I skip traced him, cold called him. And I told him on the phone, I said, I lied to his secretary. And I told him, look, if you teach me what you know, I'll split my first five deals with you 50-50 and I'll put up the money for marketing. And he said, you know, can you be here tomorrow at 11? And I said, yeah. So and then 91 days later, five deals, that was that. And it was off to the races.
Pretty solid. I like the hustle there.
Dude, I was a Wall Street guy, bro. I pick up the phone and just call. You know, I didn't even give him an ad. You know, I didn't even, I think that that's something for like your listeners to know. I didn't even give myself enough time to think about the what if this doesn't work thing or whatever rebuttals he could give me. I just picked up the phone, I called, and I just asked. So, but again, I also led with value. I did not ask him to pick his brain or take him out for a coffee. That is really, really low grade, stupid talk. So, you know, and people do that to me today and I'll tell them straight up. I'm like, dude, I'm trying to help you, but you got to help yourself. Like, this is not the way to approach someone whose time is valued at a very, very high dollar amount. You know, you should approach that conversation with value first.
100%. And I like what you said there too. It's like you just picked it up and didn't even think about it. Because I know a lot of people in just in life in general, but especially real estate, everyone's got to keep learning, keep learning, keep doing this. And they never pull the trigger. So like, where did you learn that habit? Because not a lot of people have it.
Again, going back to Wall Street, right? It was Merrill Lynch. It was very fast paced. It was New York. We didn't have a lot of time to do much, but just execute. So, you know, I'm first generation American. Both my parents are immigrants, but I come from a single mom. So she always worked, you know, 2-3 jobs, always had a business. She was always hustling. So I never heard the woman think too much about anything. She just ran out the door and came back with money. It's just kind of how it was. So I don't believe in that. I just believe in, you give me a millimeter, dude, that's it. I'm off to the races. I don't need much, right? Like that's what I tell people. Like when I do have students, I tell them, they're like, oh, I just want to get all my ducks in a row. I'm like, dude, by the time that you're lining up your ducks, I've already shot 10 rounds and I probably hit 2 ducks. I don't care. It doesn't look pretty. Doesn't look good. My scope wasn't clean. My rounds weren't clean. I just shot. You're going to succeed a lot more that way than thinking about so many things. The only thing that you should know going into any business, whether it's real estate or anything, is you don't know shit. So just start there. Admit it. Know it. It's not going to look pretty. It's not going to sound pretty. It's not even going to be pretty, but just execute and you'll get so much further along. The most successful people that I know, even till this day, they just execute. They just execute. It's imperfect action and you just run through it.
10 rounds. You miss 8, you hit 2. Most people are like, you know what? I got to get my ducks in a row. I don't want to fail. I don't want to look stupid. Like, what do you say to that?
You already look stupid. First of all, like, let's just start here. Nobody gives a shit. Okay. We think that people care a lot more about what we look like than they actually do. Most people don't give a shit other than your family. So that's number one. Number two, evaluate where you are right now. If you're broke, you're not having much going on in your life, brother, it doesn't get much lower than that. So I don't even know why you're vain. I don't even know what you have to be vain about. I was just more scared shitless of going back to work at corporate America or being broke for the rest of my life. So that took priority over, oh, I look silly. I don't give a shit what I look like. I care about the results. I cared about where I was going. And I always just had a big vision for it. Why, I have no idea. But I've always been the guy from the school of thought of like, if you're going to take a shot, you might as well take the game winning shot. You know, you might as well take that big rip. Just go for it anyway, right? Either way, it's going to work out or it's not.
Yeah, I like that too. Cause it all comes down to mindset. It's like, okay. And I think like, especially you working in this stock brokerage, stuff like that too, even calling people, like eventually you become numb to the no's. Like you just have to do things and then you fail. And it's like, okay, this isn't bad. You're numb.
It's not bad because everyone, and you know, again, that parlayed over to real estate, right? Like when I started cold calling, I hate cold calling. Like for anybody listening right now, I used to shake. I used to shiver. Sometimes I used to throw up because I hated it so bad, but I hated being broke much more. So for me, it was like, first of all, I'm probably never going to see the person on the other end of that phone. Second of all, I'm never going to run into them ever again. So once the phone hangs up, you're on to the next call. And you know, once I hit my first deal, I was like, holy shit, you can make 10 grand. I think what I made was 10 grand. So it was split 5-5, but it was 5 grand like within a calendar month. I had never made 5 grand clean like that in my life, let alone, holy crap, you can do this 5-10 times a month. Like you can see I'm a numbers guy, obviously by the sign. I'm like, dude, these numbers are stupid. Like this is where it's at. And I get to control it. You know what I mean?
So you called the guy like, hey, I'm going to split deals with you, all that kind of stuff. And you get the first deal in a month or how, like, what was that?
No. So the first deal, if I recall correctly, actually my first deal ended up being a list pendants and it was a lawsuit, which sucked. That kind of took the wind out of my sails. But my first deal was my third appointment. I actually started off with direct mail. Not advisable for anyone listening right now, but at the time, this is 2017. That's what the guy taught me. It is what it is. I was mailing out. I was bankrolling on a Bank of America credit card that I had. I had about a $30,000 limit on that card. And boy, did I use it. I pretty much funded everything to the point where I couldn't even pay it back. But it is what got me started. So my first deal, I think, came in about 45 days to when like we actually put the ink to paper. And then it ended up being a lawsuit. Then a couple weeks after that, a seller called in. Her name was Fluker. I'll never forget that last name. She had three properties in the same area in South Florida, and we ended up buying all three. I think we made like 30 grand total. It was like 10 grand a piece. One was fire damaged, one was like really bad, and the other one was just in the hood with bad tenants. But again, like seeing the collapsing of time that you could do that in, and just seeing the opportunity and going out there, meeting the buyer, like I was learning all this shit on the fly. You know, there was, even back then, it sounds like so long ago, but like 2017, there wasn't 30,000 podcasts on wholesaling or, you know, the Pace Morbys. I mean, he wasn't even a thing. Ryan Pineda is the, you know, Sean Terry was around, but he wasn't as big online, right? So it was very limited scope of information. But again, I'm a big guy of executing. I just execute. Like I could hear a flawed thing on a podcast and I'd be like, all right, cool. I'm going to go mess this up, but I'm going to execute. And I think that OJT, the on the job training kind of thing, that's worth its weight in gold. And some of my best students and or employees that I've had over the years, they have that mentality where it's like, all right, don't worry, I got it. And they go. And then they go mess it up, but they go. And that initiative is priceless.
I agree with that too. I'm like a fan of jumping out of the airplane and building your parachute on the way down. Like,
correct.
Figure it out. Now, what do you do there too with, so like you got shiny object stuff that pops up all the time too. In your head, because it's really easy to implement stuff, but the hard part is you need to make the right decisions on what to implement quickly. Like, how do you figure that out?
Like, how do I deal with making sure I'm not chasing a shiny object?
Yeah, just be like, oh yeah, you know what? That sounds like it's good, but it's not where I'm at in my career right now. I'm going to skip that one. I'm just going to go here.
Yeah. So I just go back to like core values, right? My core values. And then I also go back to the vertical that I'm in, which is wholesaling first, right? So does it feed into that? Is it going to be a distraction? How much of my time is it going to take? And is it something that I can scale? And if the answers are no to any of those, then I'm out. And you know, of course, like it sounds so cute and easy here, but it's a lot easier said than done. But that's where the discipline comes in. I chase shiny objects, right? Try to be a fix and flipper. And at this point, I was already wholesaling 50 homes a year. Why the hell would I want to do that? Well, it's because I heard about it and I thought that was the natural progression of wholesalers. It's like, oh, well, you got to be a flipper because you're not a badass until you're flipping these things, which was the stupidest thing ever. Because then I found out about how much harder a fix and flip business is and the cash conversion cycle, which sucks, right? In comparison to wholesaling. So, and the risk factor goes up tremendously. So again, I went back into wholesaling, scaled up 100 plus deals a year ever since. So again, it's just really, you got to know where your focus is at, and you have to really just, it is a hard conversation to have. And dude, trust me, I'm sure you do too. I get shiny objects thrown at me front, left, right, center. I mean, all the time. Learning how to say no is such a powerful, powerful tool.
Yeah, it's basically, I look at it now, it's like, I got to tell 99% of people no and they bring stuff to me. Otherwise, you'll just be going down a rabbit hole, you know? But you got to be able to pinpoint that one gem out of that 99 too and be like, you know what? I'm taking action. Let's do it right now.
Correct. And when you do identify it, rip your foot through the floor with the throttle. That's how I am, you know?
Yep.
Like PPC, like we were talking about it beforehand. The guy that, I won't say his name, but the guy was like, oh, you know, we could start off with 10,000. I was like, fuck that. Just start off with 25. He's like, oh shit. And I'm like, just start off with 25. I know it's going to work. My team's good. Like, let's roll. And if we're going to have mistakes, like we might as well just get through them. Like I, like a death of 1,000 cuts. I'm not that guy. I'm going to be a one bullet kind of guy, you know, just go and we'll figure it out. You know, what's the worst that could happen? It's only money.
You know what? Let's talk about marketing then. What are the best channels you've found for people that are just starting out? And what are the best channels you're thinking for people that are trying to buy their time back?
I absolutely love this question because I get it all the time. The answer that I'm going to give you is going to be so unsexy and it's going to be so out of left field if you haven't heard it before. I answer this question the same way every single time. The best marketing channel, the best list, the best anything, starting out or otherwise, is consistency. It's the best one that I know. And people kind of look at me after the fact and they're like, what does that mean? I'm like, whatever it is that you pick is going to work. Just know that. The secondary question is the frequency that you do it at, how well you do it at, and how long you stick with it. Bandit signs still work. I know guys putting out 5,000 bandit signs a week. They're crushing it. Why? Because they're consistent. They put them out at the same time. They put out the same freaking message. They take the calls the same way. They handle the deals and they close it.
I love that answer. Love that answer because you're right. Everything does work. Everything works and nothing works. Depends how you do it, you know?
Exactly. And people, dude, I just spoke at an event last week in South Florida and people were like, direct mail? What do you mean? I was like, yes. Shitty looking postcards still work, but it's a 0.25% return on contact. And I'm like, cause you're tracking the wrong metric. You should be tracking ROI. I don't give a shit if it's 1/1,000,000th of 1% of a contact rate. If I can make 50 grand, what the hell does it matter? You're tracking the wrong metric and you're listening to people more than likely that don't even know what the hell they're doing because they haven't actually done it. So anyway, let me not digress. But if you are just starting off, sweat equity is going to be your best friend. Okay. Let's just get that out of the way right now. If you think that you're going to come into this business with, you know, broke, not knowing stuff, and you're not going to have to put in work, I suggest you go get a job at McDonald's. This is not for you. The entrepreneurship route is not going to be for you. And that's just not going to work. So cold calling more than likely would be the choice, the weapon of choice. If you're newer, if I had to start all over again, it's the fastest way to get to it. It's the most cost effective way. You can blanket entire areas to do it. And by the way, you're going to get so much of a mindset training because it is such a difficult thing to do. It's so uncomfortable and you're going to be able to get a lot of reps in very quickly. And that's honestly what you're going for, especially the newer you are. You want to learn as fast as humanly possible. And the only other way to do that is how I did it. And it is still my recommendation to this day is partnering with somebody right out of the gate. Partner with somebody like a me, like a you, whatever, whoever it is that can split, that can cut your learning curve in half. That way, and then you give them equity. And I see that being a lot of problems for people where they're like, oh man, why would I want to give this guy 50%? I'm like, because you own 50% of nothing right now. He's got the knowledge. She's got the knowledge. Buy their time, buy their mistakes, buy the list that you shouldn't buy because they're going to tell you that, right? They'll invest in you if you invest in them and if their upside is there. So that the cold calling would probably be the best way if you're starting off brand new. Please, for the love of God, I know when you're broke, you don't really have a lot of options and money and stuff like that. And I get it. I've been there. But for the love of God, don't look for cheap. All right. Cheap is synonymous with shit. The cheapest leads, the cheapest skip tracing, the cheapest calling system. It's just synonymous with shit. Okay. More than likely, you do get what you pay for. Whatever it is that you can swing for a little bit better of a list, a little bit better skip tracing, a little bit of a better dialer. It is going to make, you know, a world of difference in the long run. And, you know, right now for me, what's working for my team is a lot of PPC, cold calling, and still very targeted direct mail.
You guys should all go back, listen to this, and like re-listen to that, because there was a lot in there. So
yeah, I know I gave you a lot on that one, but
no, and that's awesome too, because like you touched on, like even cold call, like I used to cold call too. I cold called, I was in the insurance business, and it sucks, but you learn a ton, but it builds your confidence too. Like if you start there, you get your own deals, you have the confidence now that you can run a business yourself. You don't have to rely on other people. Then you get to choose to pay other people. But if you hire cold callers, you already know how to do the job. It's not like you're going blindly hiring cold callers. You know how to do the job so you can like quality control it, you know?
I'm sure you know, in the insurance business or even in your real estate business, myself included, I know how to hire for things nowadays. And it's easy, right? When people look at me and they're like, yeah, well, you've been in the game for 7 years. I'm like, yeah, but understand that every single role, every single seat in my business, once upon a time, I've worn that hat. So I know what to do and I know what not to do because I've messed it all up. So there's no circumvention around that one. You know, you got to go through hell on that one to get done. So look, just trust the process, man. And like a lot of people with Insta this and Insta that, they're trying to Insta millionaire themselves. There's no such thing, man. And I think it's hilarious because I used to think that same way too. Obviously, I don't anymore, but I just joined a mastermind that's 50K a year. That, you know, I'm well aware that that's someone's yearly salary somewhere, right? An American's yearly salary. I'm full well aware of that. And people are like, oh my God, that is so much money. Like, that's so expensive. I'm like, yeah, but I get to hang around with 25 multimillionaires in multiple different verticals that are usually 10 years my senior. So what's that worth? It's worth tens of millions of dollars for me. So 50 grand is actually a steal for me, right? In that scenario. So and that's on any level. I would look for those types of scenarios with whatever you got. Play to your strengths and use that to the best of your ability in whatever stage you're in. When I was broke, the only value I could add to somebody was going out, finding deals and bringing them back, which would make them money, which in turn would give them an incentive to give them their time to me, which in turn, you know, accelerated my process.
Any stage of your life, find the people above you and just try to give value, because I found before I knew how to make money, I thought it was different. I thought you had to do different things to make money. It turns out it's not as hard, but also it is around surrounding yourself with the people that know how to do it. But I always thought like real successful people, real busy, they're just like arrogant, all that kind of stuff. When people get successful, they want to pull people with them. 100%. So it's like just like you're saying, like you get around those people, give them value, but they're looking to pass along their knowledge that they've learned and avoid some mistakes for you.
100%, man. And if they're not, then that's just an asshole. Like, there's no way around that. Like, it is what it is. Listen, you have assholes everywhere. I know guys that are multimillionaires that are just dicks. Yeah. And I'm sorry. I don't even know if you can curse on this, but
you can do whatever you want.
I love it. I love it. This is America. But yeah, you know, like, dude, it's like that on any level.
But how many multimillionaires do you know that did the cold calling, did the door knocking, that are assholes?
Not a lot.
Right. Like the guys that have been through the grind, but there are some really rich people that are born into it too, and some other people that are jerky.
Totally different story. Yeah, I can tell. I really don't hang around a lot of any that I can think of that are inherited wealth. I just don't have anything to relate to them with. You know, and it's almost like people that I was not in the military, but my brother was. It's people that have deployed together in the military. They're gonna understand each other on a certain level where, you know, we are not going to be able to relate to. So it's the same way. So I there's a certain like level of admiration and respect there, like that I have for you and you have for me, and we haven't really met till today, but we just know, like, yeah, you've been through some shit. Yeah, I've been through some shit. Yeah, but we're here, right?
Right. You find more people like that too. I found best people I work with, I don't even know if that should be what saying this, but it's usually criminals, people that are alcoholics, had real tough lives, because you pop out at the end, you got like thick skin. And you just work like if someone pops out of that kind of situation successfully, has had something hard, then they got what it takes. And like, we jive really well, like in our business and everything.
Me too. Like I had a business partnership divorce, about a year ago, a little bit over a year ago. I had two of them actually. It was one of the worst experiences of my life. Definitely wasn't in the cards, I could tell you that. And it set me back quite a bit mentally, emotionally, financially, spiritually, like the whole night. It tested pretty much everything I had geared up for in the last 5 years at that time. And I came out the other side, dude, a lot more humble, a lot better of a person, a lot more focused, and just a lot more energized to know like, okay, this is not what I want in my life. This is what I want in my life. And it's funny enough because it's just attracted, going back to the law of attraction, it's attracted so much better quality people in my life because I've lost and I've shed the fat and I've shed that bad energy away.
And you have to experience it to even know.
Yeah, I didn't know. I mean, I'll tell you right now, before that, I was arrogant in a lot of ways. I was egotistical in a lot of ways. I thought I had made it, for lack of a better term. By the way, for those of you listening, if you ever feel like you've made it, let me be the first to tell you that you are fucked if that's how you feel. So I would change that mindset like yesterday. And you know, that I think that was the universe, God's way, whatever you want to call it, of slapping me back and being like, hey, check this out. I can take it away in a second. Watch this. You know, so it commanded a lot more gratitude for me, for sure.
Yeah, I respect that. Different type of question for you here. I know you speak Spanish also, right?
Yep.
How well does that play? Because I look at it, I don't know many investors, but I know down south there's a lot of Spanish speaking people. Even like with us, we generate leads and some of the people speak Spanish. We can't do anything with them. How does that play into your business being able to speak Spanish down where you guys are? And like what percentage of business do you get just because of that, do you think?
I would say that probably about 35% of my business over the years has been Spanish speaking only. So if it wasn't for obviously being born and raised in Miami, Spanish was my first language, I would have never had the success that I had in terms of numbers and growth and scale and all that. South Florida is a different animal. Miami is its own country at this point. Might as well be. But yeah, man, it's super, it was a necessity. It wasn't even like a, oh, well, maybe. I mean, 35% of your business, that's a lot of money, especially when you're talking about a $7 million a year business. That's a lot of money, dude. That's a lot of money. You're talking about millions of dollars at that point. So it also, I didn't know it at the time, but it forced us to deal in two languages, which is already just complex, you know, in and of itself. We already have a pretty complex business, by the way, as you know. And then you add a language barrier to it. I mean, you got to hire bilingual cold callers. You got to hire bilingual TCs. You have to hire bilingual project managers. I mean, which most of them are anyway, right? You have to hire bilingual acquisition reps, bilingual disposition reps. I mean, there's a lot of things, right? Your VAs more than likely have to be bilingual or at least a few of them. And some of your SOPs are going to be in two languages, which is fun. SOPs already suck. And then you got to do them in two languages. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Your title company's got to be bilingual, right? Because they have to explain these things to them. So it's definitely a challenge, but it only made us better. It only made me better for sure as a business operator. And it's a big cultural thing. Like anything, right? If you're African American, you're usually going to do business with another African American. If you're Hispanic, you're usually going to do business with another Hispanic, right? So it's tough from a cultural perspective. And that's why I think I've seen a lot of people come to South Florida and get crashed and burned coming from virtual markets. And they're crushing it in their own respective markets. But then they get down here and they're like, dude, I can't figure this shit out. I just don't understand. I'm like, it's not for you to understand. It's just what it is. It's tough.
I think about that too. And it's like everyone's got their skills and like differentiators and things. That, in my opinion, is a huge differentiator because I don't know many investors that, because it's pain in the ass, all of a sudden marketing and everything, that they can co-brand. But everybody's got their skill set. Could be speaking a different language or whatever. It's like, think about what you're really good at too and how you can differentiate in your marketing stuff because it can help. Like how you can help other people by your talents can differentiate you, and you don't have to be the same dude down the street.
Yeah. You know, I'll give you one example. One of the things I think I don't want to say I was the first one, but I'd venture to say I was probably one of the first ones that I've ever known to do. We were doing a lot of direct mail, like 150,000 to 200,000 pieces a month for years running. And I think I was one of the first ones to do double-sided direct mail postcards, where one side was full Spanish, one side was full English with two different numbers that they could call. That was, you know, I thought was really freaking cool and it worked like a charm. And, you know, even my buddy Todd Swigerty that owns Yellow Letter HQ and Justin from Open Letter Marketing, they were like, dude, yeah, we could do that. Like it was something we created on the fly. Like it was like, yeah, I guess we could do that. I was like, look, I'll write the copy, right? I'll do it in Spanish so it sounds natural, but can we do this? And he's like, yeah, why not? We just print it on the other side. And I'm like, all right, cool. So we had to condense the postcard and put it all on one side. So it forces you as a business owner to think about things that the other business owner doesn't have to think about, because that's not a problem for them. That's not a challenge for them in Ohio, let's say, for example. Not taking anything away from Ohio. But again, it just forces you to ask different questions. It forces you to create different solutions. And you got to do it. And, you know, I think you just become sharper that way.
What's your top book you recommend to people?
Dude, Think and Grow Rich, man. Napoleon Hill. Yeah, I know a lot of people say it. I mean, Rich Dad Poor Dad, of course, is, you know, a classic, but Think and Grow Rich really changed my whole frame of thinking in my life. Cause I was a corporate guy and I was a numbers guy. I was a finance guy. I never thought of money that way. I never even knew what the hell the law of attraction was, right? What's interesting is that book has been written, I think, 100 years ago at this point. It's crazy to think that the most successful, important minds and business titans of their time were using the term mastermind and were doing what they were doing. And you know, they believed in the law of attraction, the ether and this and that, not to get super hokey pokey, but that was a book that my mind, I read it every single year, at least once a year, ongoing, because you change. So you always get a different message out of that literature. So yeah, that was a great book for just overall business mindset and everything.
Yeah, I agree 100% on that book. That's awesome.
Which one's your favorite?
Think and Grow Rich, my number one, and Richest Man in Babylon is number two.
You know what? That was going to be my number three for sure.
Was it?
I love that book. Yeah, bro.
That book changed my life. When I read that book, I started making money. That's what it was. I started keeping money.
Yeah, it's a big difference. Yeah. You realize, like, you know, that book is so awesome. But like Arcad and all that, like within the book, like him, just you flip the relationship with money. Like money's a slave to you, not the other way around. And we've always been, I mean, at least me, immigrant mentality from my parents, like, oh, you gotta go work really, really hard for your money. And yes, that's true to a degree. And then after you do it, it's like, no, you gotta work smart for your money. The wealthiest people I know, they worked hard to get there to a certain wealth metric, but usually rich. But after that, it's all, okay, leverage, time collapsing, and flipping money on its head.
Yep. Yeah. Make it work for you. Yeah. You got to get to that tipping point though. You got to hustle. It's like cold calling. You got to get your first couple deals to get the money to be able to spend the money to try to have that multiply without using time anymore.
Correct. And that's what, again, when you're starting off, your biggest strength that you have is your time, is sweat equity. That's it. Just admit it. It's where you are. And it's beautiful to be there. And just know that you're not going to be there forever. But if you can apply that diligently over a year and a half's time, dude, you'll never have to worry about money again. Like, that's a fact, you know? And now, you know, you and I can go out and make money anywhere, any place, anytime, with very limited resources, because we understand the game.
Yep, love it. All right, so Will, what's the best place and how can people connect with you?
So Instagram is my heaviest platform. So at willynumbers.com is my website. That's W-I-L-L-Y and then just the word numbers. On Instagram, I'm usually the one that responds, personally, if it's a good message, let's just say. I put out a ton of content, man, in English and Spanish. So definitely Instagram. I'm on TikTok as well, but Instagram being the heaviest platform for sure.
All right. And I know you work with investors too. Real quick, run through, who's your avatar? Like, who's a really good person to reach out to if they wanted to get involved with like JV and working with you on deals? Like, what does that investor look like and how does, like, what's a good situation there?
Yeah. So usually I'm not working with newbies. If you are a newbie, it's nothing against you personally. It's just, you know, a time thing for me and you need a lot of mindset stuff. So all my free content is for you. There's more than enough there to get you started. For God's sakes, I got started with a lot less. Usually someone who's done a deal or a couple deals is ideal, right? And you bring a deal, my team will handle the rest. If it is a deal, we'll handle the disposition. We'll handle all the process, the TC work, transaction coordinating, all that kind of stuff. I might actually buy it from you flat out, right? I'm known to do that as well, to do whatever it is that I want with the deal. So, and if you do, you know, if you are doing marketing and you want to scale up and you want to do some consulting, I'm happy to help as well. You can shoot me a private DM and then we can talk about that. That's really the best avatar. And South Florida only, please. I don't do this, you know, nothing against everybody, but I don't do this nationwide shit or statewide stuff. I focus on my backyard. If it's a deal, it's gone within a couple of seconds. So that's the best way.
All right, good stuff. So everybody, we're going to have his link and the contact info in the show notes also. Hey, Willie, thanks for coming on, man. This was a good time.
I appreciate you having me, man. I really do. Thank you.
Hey, everyone, thanks for listening. Until next time, get out there, crush it, close some more deals. See you guys.